family. Nrupan, the kings. Mitra, his friends. Suhrida, and well-wishers. Anyan, others. Cha, also. Sarvashah, in all sorts of ways. Abhikshanam, constantly. Pujayam, asha, worshipped. Narayana para, devoted to Lord Narayan. Nripaha, the king. Translation. In various ways, King Yudhishthir, who had totally dedicated his life to Lord Narayan, continuously honored his relatives, his immediate family, the other kings, his friends and well-wishers, and all others present as well. This verse doesn't have a purport. We'll continue reading till verse number 30. All the men there shone like demigods. They were adorned with jeweled earrings, flower garlands, turbans, waistcoats, silk dhotis, and valuable pearl necklaces. The lovely faces of the women were beautified by their matched earrings and locks of hair, and they all wore gold belts. Then the highly cultured priests, the Vedic authorities, who had served as sacrificial witnesses, the specially invited kings, the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, demigods, sages, forefathers, and mystic spirits, and the chief planetary rulers and their followers, all of them have been worshipped by King Yudhishthir, took his permission and departed. O King, each for his own abode. As they all glorified the wonderful Rajasri Yajna performed by the great saintly king and the servants of Lord Hari, they were not satiated, just as ordinary man is never satiated when drinking nectar. At that time, Raja Yudhishthir stopped a number of his friends, immediate family members, and other relatives from departing, among them Lord Krishna. Out of love, Yudhishthir could not let them go, for he felt the pain of imminent separation. My dear Parikshit, the Supreme Lord remained there for some time to please the king. After first sending Shamba and other Yadu heroes back to Dwaraka, thus King Yudhishthir, the son of Dharma, was at last relieved of his burning ambition, having by the grace of Lord Krishna successfully crossed the vast and formidable ocean of his desires. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The previous chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam clearly explain that King Yudhishthir intensely desired to demonstrate to the world the supremacy of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the blessings received by those who surrendered to Him. To do this, King Yudhishthir performed the Rajasriya sacrifice, a very difficult task. Srila Prabhupada writes in this connection, in the material world, everyone has a particular type of desire to be fulfilled, but one is never able to fulfill his desires to his full satisfaction. But King Yudhishthir, because of his unflinching devotion to Krishna, could fulfill all his desires successfully by the performance of the Rajasriya sacrifice. From the description of the Rajasriya Yajna, it appears that such a function is a great ocean of opulent desires. It is not possible for an ordinary man to cross over such an ocean. Nevertheless, by the grace of Lord Krishna, King Yudhishthir was able to cross over it very easily, and thus he became freed from all anxieties. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha श्रीचैतन्य मनोविष्टम् स्थापितम् येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यम् ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहम् श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतः पदकमलम् श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपम् साग्रजाताम् सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितम् तम् सजीवम् साद्वैतम् सावधूतम् पर्यनासहितम् कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च। हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते। तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरि वृषभानुसुते देवि प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। Seeking the blessings of all the devotees to be able to speak something on the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Essentially, we used to hear the new Vrindavan days about devotees sitting. Kind of in a similar state. Please forgive me if I make any mistakes. Quite sleep deprived for last few days. So, this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the dealings of devotees and in the mindset of how a devotee thinks. Specifically, I would like to focus on one aspect of this series. It's about how devotees deal with their success. Here we find Yudhishthir Maharaj dealing with the success of the Rajasya Yajna, and we'll also find in the same chapter Duryodhan not being able to deal with somebody else's success. So I'll divide the talk into different sections. First, we will discuss on the concept of celebrating other people's success. So here we find that Duryodhan is having a tough time in celebrating the success of Yudhishthir. Most people in this world are in a very similar mindset to Duryodhan when it comes to handling or seeing other people's success. So most people, because they don't know how to celebrate other people's success, they want to celebrate other people's failures. And that's what exactly Duryodhan's situation is here. Immediately after the Rajasya sacrifice, the whole episode of Duryodhan trying to make Yudhishthir fail and celebrate Yudhishthir's failure starts. So essentially, the reaction to Duryodhan's attending the Rajasya sacrifice is very interesting, because when somebody attends, or rather somebody sees somebody else succeeding, inside the mind of the person there is a lot going on. That's what we can very clearly see in Duryodhan's situation here. When Yudhishthir was celebrating the Rajasya sacrifice, Duryodhan was made in charge for collecting gifts of Yudhishthir. Kings from all over the planet came to wish Yudhishthir and participate in Yudhishthir's sacrifice. And every king naturally brought gifts with him. And when Duryodhan was collecting all those gifts, so he was mentally keeping a calculation of who got what gift. And when he came back to Hastinapur, burning in envy, he could narrate to his father exactly who gave what gift, how much quantity of that gift was given. He knew exactly every gift that Yudhishthir received by heart. It's not that Duryodhan made a list or anything like that. When offerings come for Radhashtami or Janmashtami, we have list made of. Duryodhan didn't need to make any list because the envy was so powerful that he kept it in his mind. Nobody really keeps things in mind unless it is sometimes triggered out of positive emotion or negative emotion. Memory has to be triggered by some emotion. So Duryodhan was so envious that he remembered everything, and then he started plotting how to bring failure to Yudhishthir Maharaj. So essentially, the mindset of envy of Duryodhan ran down in his dynasty, literally. If you study his father's life, Dhritarashtra's life, though he was born blind, he lived a life of hypocrisy. Essentially, he constantly was hiding behind his weakness and heavily showing his, demonstrating his envy. So every time he would go through, he made a mistake, he would say, "I'm weak." And he would shield all his wrong by his weakness. And Duryodhan, the son, became naturally born out of great envy. And not just Dhritarashtra, but even you go backwards into the dynasty, it all started from Satyavati, the wife of Shantanu. So from there, the insecurity and heavy ambition started. She was born in a fisherman's family dynasty, but she had the ambition to become the queen of the world. And so having ambition is not a problem. But her ambition, to fulfill her ambition, she put a condition that Bhishma will not sit on the throne, so that her sons get the power. So from what started from Satyavati as an innocent exhibition of ambition, ended with Duryodhan as a powerful exhibition of that same ambition. So if you see, in the blood of the dynasty, that ambition is running. From Satyavati through Vichitravirya, who was not capable of sitting on the throne, but still he had a desire to sit. And then through Vichitravirya, Dhritarashtra, and through Dhritarashtra, Duryodhan now. So that ambition of sitting on the throne is running through the dynasty. So being blind in eyes is one thing, and being blind in vision is another thing. And being blind to reality is a third thing. So there are many blind people in the world who focused on what ability one had. And Dhritarashtra focused on his inability. And he said, his mindset was, if I can't rule, I'll rule through my son. So, most people in this world, they keep working hard without knowing what the goal is. Unfortunately, such people don't listen to good advice also. Vidura was constantly there advising Dhritarashtra what is wrong or what is right, what is the goal. But Dhritarashtra just didn't listen. There's this very interesting story of one man named Sheikh Chilli. So this fellow, one day he was told to cut a tree. So he sat on top of a tree to cut one of the branches of the tree. So somebody was passing under and he saw this fellow cutting the branch of the tree on which he was sitting. He said, the man below, he said, "You fool, don't cut that branch, you will fall down." Sheikh Chilli, when he saw that this man is advising him, "Don't cut that branch," he said, "This fellow is envious of my success. He knows that if I cut this branch, I will become successful. I'll sell this wood and I'll make a lot of money. This fellow doesn't want me to become successful. Therefore, he's telling me like this. He continued cutting. He cut the branch and he fell down when the branch broke. And after he fell down, he said, that fellow must be an astrologer. You know, he could predict the future. So essentially, when advised, these people think that the other person is envious of his success. And when he actually fails, he thinks that those people are astrologers. They know the future. It's not about knowing the future. It's not about being an astrologer. It's about common sense. So actually, the nature of the mind is to be never satisfied. The mind wants newer and newer things. It is never satisfied with what is already available to you for your enjoyment. Just like the nature of water is never to be in one place. Water cannot be held. It just keeps moving. And the nature of water is that it wants to go ahead and be in different destinations. Water in the ocean is not satisfied in being in the ocean. It wants to go to the sky. Evaporates. Water vapor. And water in the sky in the form of clouds doesn't want to be under the clouds. It wants to fall down as rain. And water on the, when it falls down in the rain on the mountains, it doesn't want to stay on the mountains. It wants to flow down in the form of rivers. And the water in the river doesn't want to stay in the river. It wants to flow back into the ocean. So essentially, the nature of the mind is to be dissatisfied and constantly move to newer and newer destinations, newer and newer things. Satisfaction should not be seen as a lack of ambition. In fact, the very purpose of one's ambition is to achieve satisfaction eventually. Nobody thinks of being ambitious to always be ambitious. Every ambitious person at some point thinks that after I achieve this, then I'll become satisfied. So the purpose of ambition is satisfaction, and therefore we shouldn't think that satisfaction is a lack of ambition. So Duryodhan, he knew what is right. The blind king Dhritarashtra never was ready to take any advice, and so was his son Duryodhan. Duryodhan said, I know what dharma is, but I don't want to follow it. So essentially, what attachments do is it makes a person completely blind. Dhritarashtra was physically blind, and his attachments made his vision also blind. Duryodhan was physically having eyes, but his attachments made him his vision blind. So essentially, attachments make you blind to the realities of life. One time, there was a man who was driving a car, sports car. He was driving really fast. And he was driving so fast that there was an old man walking on the road. He just hit him and the old man fell somewhere and died. And this guy, he lost control and he banged on a tree. And he fell out of the car. Car was completely shattered. His door was smashed. He was bleeding all over. And when he fell out of the car, he was crying like anything. So people came running to him to see if he is fine. And they saw him crying and sitting on the road. They said, why are you crying? This man said, my brand new car is all broken. They said, you fool. You have killed one old man over there. And more than that, you have lost your hands. He lost his arm. He didn't even bother. He didn't even realize that his arm is lost. And he was crying that the car is smashed. This man, when he heard that his arm is lost, he saw that he didn't have an arm. He started crying even more. He said, now my Rolex watch also is gone. Can you imagine? You know? So how attachments make one completely blind to the realities of life. Most people feel that when I get my ambitions, when I get what I want, what I'm aspiring for, then that success is what will give me joy. Unfortunately, prosperity cannot be dragged out of somebody's life, and it cannot be dragged into your life. When Vishwamitra and Vasishtha, they were fighting, the fight began because of Shabala, the cow that Vasishtha had. So Vasishtha had a cow that could, you know, fulfill all his desires. This is Kamadhenu cow. And Vasishtha, he could ask for anything and that cow will fulfill all his desires. So Vishwamitra, he was a king at that point of time. So he felt, if I get that cow, then I'll become prosperous. Now Vasishtha didn't have anything, he was a beggar. But he only had this cow. Vishwamitra had everything else except this cow. So Vishwamitra started bargaining with Vasishtha, and at some point he realized that I cannot bargain with him. So he started dragging Shabala, the cow, away from Vasishtha. So the cow represents prosperity. You cannot drag prosperity into your life, nor can you drag prosperity out of somebody else's life. Vasishtha got that Lord Vishnu, being pleased with him, offered Shabala, offered the cow as a gift. So prosperity comes when you deserve it. Prosperity is a result of grace, and it comes when you do your acts in such a way that you deserve what you get. So Duryodhan here, his ambitions have grown to such an extent that he wants to drag prosperity into his life by creating an atmosphere of celebrating Yudhishthira's failure. So essentially, ambitions are fine, but our ambition should not affect others negatively. What is the difference between greed and ambition? When ambition crosses the fine line of ethics, it becomes greed. So here we find that Duryodhan not having the ability to cope with other people's success, but in the same episode we find how Yudhishthir is able to cope with his own success. So one thing is being able to celebrate other success. Another thing is being able to cope with your own success. Most people who are successful, they fail because they are not able to cope up with their own success. Because to cope up with your own success, it requires substance. To become successful, it's not so much substance, but to sustain the success requires substance. When you have talent and you have good attitude, you become successful. So essentially, talent brings you to the bridge of success. Good attitude helps you cross that bridge of success. And character helps you sustain that success, retain that success. So Yudhishthira Maharaj was not just successful, but he was able to cope with his success also. So essentially, we find this Rajasya sacrifice is the episode of Yudhishthira's success. But what follows the Rajasya sacrifice, what we are seeing right now in this particular section, is the episode of how, though Yudhishthira became successful, how he coped with success by worshipping Krishna, by worshipping the great saintly people, by respecting everyone that came for the Rajasya sacrifice. When Yudhishthira was declared to be the king of the world, when Yudhishthira was worshipped in this Rajasya sacrifice, he was asked, whom do you want to offer the first argya to? So essentially, the first argya is offered to the most important person in the assembly. Can you imagine what kind of personalities were there? Narada Muni, Vyasadev, Bhishma, Drona, some of the biggest sages in the world, they were all assembled over there. And Yudhishthira had to make a choice, who is the most influential, who is the most respectable person in this assembly. And Yudhishthira chose to offer the first argya to Krishna. So just by offering the first argya to Krishna, just by offering the first argya to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yudhishthira utilized his success in glorifying Krishna. So here we find in the purport, it is explained that to perform the Rajasya sacrifice is very difficult. But Yudhishthira performed the Rajasya sacrifice in spite of so much difficulty, not so much because he wanted that position of the king of the world, because he wanted that position so that occupying that position he can give a higher position to Krishna. So becoming successful is not a problem, but after they become successful, how do you use that success? That determines whether that success itself was useful or no. So Yudhishthira Maharaj, though he became successful, he always had the ability to be sober in the midst of success. And therefore, it is very difficult for somebody who doesn't have character, doesn't have substance to deal with success. When the Pandavas were in exile, and there was a certain section where they were thirsty, and Yudhishthir sent Sahadev to get some water. And when he went to get some water, when he reached the lake was owned by a yaksha. And the yaksha told Sahadev that unless you answer these my questions, you can't take the water. And Sahadev refused. So when he drank the water, he died. And then Nakul followed, Arjun followed, Bhim followed, all of them died one after another. And then after that, Yudhishthir came. Yaksha asked Yudhishthir a series of questions, and Yudhishthir answered all the questions successfully. So can you imagine, if you look at the Yaksha Prashna, the questions asked by Yaksha and the answers given by Yudhishthir, it was almost like a debate. It was almost like a quiz contest, what we today call as rapid fire, you know. And so many questions Yaksha was asking, and so many questions, so many answers Yudhishthir was giving. Few very interesting answers that Yudhishthir gave in the context of what we are talking shows the mindset of Yudhishthir. Yaksha asked him, by renouncing which thing does one become lovable? Yudhishthir answered, pride. He said, by renouncing which thing does one never suffer grief? Yudhishthir answered, anger. By renouncing which thing does one become wealthy? He said, desire. By renouncing which thing does one become happy? He said, avarice. What is the topmost happiness? Contentment. And what is the biggest among laudable things? Integrity. So essentially, he answered all these questions with depth. And every answer that Yudhishthir was giving, he was himself following. At the end of the whole question answer session, Yaksha was impressed, and he declared that, Yudhishthir, you are successful. And then Yaksha told him, now that you are successful, I give you the opportunity to revive one of your brothers. You can pick up one of them, you choose one of them, and that person will live. Yudhishthir, he thought for a moment, and he said, I choose Sahadev. Yaksha was completely shocked. He said, come on, what can Sahadev do for you? Choose Arjun, choose Bhima. They are most powerful warriors. You are going to have a war very soon. What Sahadev will do for you? Yudhishthir said, my father Pandu had two wives, Kunti and Madri. I am the son of Kunti and I am alive. It is just if one son of Madri also lives. Yaksha was so impressed that in the midst of success, Yudhishthir retained his integrity. In the midst of success, Yudhishthir retained his stability in making a decision. And Yaksha revived all the brothers. Essentially, in spite of victory to remain humble, in spite of victory to remain stable, that requires a lot of substance. Again, when Duryodhan was out to make fun of the Pandavas, we saw some time back that Yudhishthir was having a celebration of the Rajasiva sacrifice. Yudhishthir was having a celebration of the Rajasiva sacrifice. And in the celebration, Duryodhan couldn't handle he couldn't be stable. And we find much later in another episode where Duryodhan is celebrating, Yudhishthir retained his stability. When the Pandavas were in exile, Duryodhan came to the forest to have a party. And so the forest is huge. Dvaitavan was a huge forest. And in a forest, if you want to choose a picnic spot, you can choose any picnic spot. But Duryodhan chose a picnic spot to have his party just outside the house of the Pandavas. Can you imagine? You know. So from Duryodhan's point of view, success is not about being happy yourself. Success is about seeing envy in the eyes of your enemy. Or rather, seeing pain in the eyes of the enemy. That's when you're really successful. So Duryodhan came to camp outside the house of the Pandavas to show the Pandavas, see, I am happy and you're sad. And he was having his acid party, you know, whatever you call it, rave party. And he was drinking, you know, and having fun. Bollywood music intensely going on, you know. He was doing everything that, you know, you see today happening. And Arjuna had a friend who was a Gandharva, whose name was Chitrasen. So he was very angry with Duryodhan's mindset. He attacked Duryodhan's camp, and all the friends of Duryodhan ran away, including Karna, who was always boastful, Shakuni, who was supposed to be his well-wisher. All of them deserted Duryodhan and ran away, and Duryodhan was caught very badly and tied up by the Gandharvas. So one of the soldiers of Duryodhan came running to Yudhishthir, to Arjun first, and he said, "Please save, Duryodhan is tied up by the Gandharvas." Arjun Bhima started laughing. He said, "What we were supposed to do, the Gandharvas have done, you know." He said, he deserves it. And then that soldier went to Yudhishthir and he told him that Duryodhan is tied up, please save him, he's in trouble. So Yudhishthir instructed Arjun and Bhima to go and rescue. Arjun and Bhima said, "Come on, what's going on, you know? Why should we interfere in what is not our matter?" Yudhishthir said, "For the world we are 5 and they are 100. For between us we are 5 and they are 100. But for the world we are 105. We are brothers. It's supposed to be Kauravas. Go and help." And Arjun actually went and helped. Of course, this episode shows that when Duryodhan was successful, or rather Duryodhan was having his party, Yudhishthir maintained his composure. And when Yudhishthir was successful, Duryodhan couldn't maintain his composure. So essentially, coping with your own success is more difficult than coping with other people's success. So Duryodhan, when he saw Yudhishthir succeed, he couldn't cope up with it. But when he himself was successful, Yudhishthir coped up with it. Again, the mindset of how do you handle your own success comes when it comes to choosing a priority. In the Rajasuya sacrifice, we saw Yudhishthir choosing Krishna as the topmost reason for which the Rajasuya sacrifice was done, to glorify Krishna. And when Arjun had to make a choice between Krishna and his Narayani Sena, Arjun chose Krishna. And that one decision of Arjun showed that for them, success was not a matter of quantity, but it was a matter of quality. Success was not a matter of having resources, having great numbers, having great strength. Success was a matter of having substance. Success was a matter of having Krishna on one side. And therefore, we find that most young heroes want to become independent fast. That's what the mindset of a hero is. I don't want to become subordinate to anybody. But look at Arjuna and look at Yudhishthir. As soon as they got a choice to choose subordination over independence, they chose subordination to Krishna over independence. By choosing Krishna, Arjun chose to be subordinate to Krishna. By choosing Krishna as the topmost of the rational sacrifice, Yudhishthir chose to be subordinate to Krishna. So essentially, the principle behind being able to celebrate, to cope up with your own success, is the principle of humility. The principle that I am not the controller, I cannot control everything in this world. And therefore, many times people have overconfidence in one's own abilities. And therefore they make choices based on that overconfidence. One time there were two ants that were somewhere in a forest. Their path. So one ant told the other ant, "Let's beat him up. He's coming on our direction." The second ant said, "Don't worry. Just leave him alone. He is one and we are two. It's not fair fight, you know." What's the question of fighting an elephant? So essentially, pride comes before a downfall. So most people in this world who are successful to some extent, they stamp on the abilities of God to claim their success. They actually show that their success is independent of God's will. And that's what we find in the whole episode of the Rajasuya sacrifice here. Duryodhan's mindset is that his success is independent of Krishna's presence in his life. But Yudhishthir, every time he has any milestone of success, they immediately assign that success to Krishna. Every time Arjun has some milestone of success, he assigns that success to Krishna. And therefore, first is, how do you celebrate other success? The second is, how do you cope up with your own success? And the third is, how do you speak about your own success? So when we find in this episode, as we are reading in these translations, that all the sages and Yudhishthir Maharaj and many of these personalities who were a part of the Rajasuya sacrifice, their mindset was constant glorification of others. Every sage who came here, all the great personalities who came here, they went back glorifying Yudhishthir. They went back glorifying Krishna. Yudhishthir Maharaj himself, peak of success, he went back glorifying Krishna. So essentially, what is spoken about in these verses and purports is one fact, that one should never be satisfied in glorifying other devotees. This is like drinking nectar. This verse, it says that all, as they all glorify the wonderful Rajasuya Yajna performed by that great saintly king and servant of Lord Hari, they were not satiated. Just as an ordinary man is never satiated when drinking nectar. So essentially, one should never be satiated with glorifying other devotees. This is like drinking nectar. But glorifying oneself is like drinking poison. And therefore, when we focus on getting ourselves right, we're actually also focusing on proving that others are wrong. We tend to expect perfection from the world, and we tend to excuse our own imperfections. We are ready to cut the leg of others so that we look bigger, taller than them. So essentially, when we speak ill of others, we don't derive anything from it. And therefore, we have to use our intelligence in trying to find good in others. Unfortunately, we use our intelligence trying to find faults in others. And seldom we use our intelligence trying to find good in others. You know, in my programs, many times I have birthday celebrations. And in these birthday celebrations, one of the things that I do is, I ask the birthday boy or, you know, birthday girl, whoever it is, or man or woman, to some person in their family or some friend of theirs to glorify them. I tell you, my experiences have been shocking in these birthday events. The reason is very simple. The reason is, the family member or the friend struggle to find anything good to speak about the other person. And they struggle so badly, it's totally unbelievable, that they live together, they are constantly together, but they cannot find anything good to speak about the other. The reason is because all our intelligence goes in finding good in ourselves. And all our intelligence goes in finding faults in others. And therefore, when intelligence has to be used to find good in others, we struggle. And therefore, great devotees of the Lord, they find great satisfaction in trying to glorify others. And in fact, how much ever they glorify others, they feel that they have not done enough. In this episode of the Samudra Manthan Leela, when the poison comes up first, Lord Shiva comes and drinks that poison. Why does Shiva drink the poison? Shiva drinks the poison to bring glory to others, to bring glory to the demigods. And after the Samudra Manthan, Rahu came and drank the nectar for self-glorification, because he wanted to become eternal. So look at the, you know, contradiction here. Shiva drank poison to glorify others, and Rahu drank nectar to glorify himself. But eventually what happened was, Rahu lost his life and Shiva got fame from that episode. So essentially, Shiva got glorified in trying to bring glory to others, drinking poison. And Rahu lost what he had in trying to bring glory to himself. So self-glorification is actually poisonous, and glorifying others is actually nectar. So if you study the Chaitanya Leela, the whole episode of 21 hours of Mahaprakash Leela, the biggest pastime Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did in this world, 21 hours of Mahaprakash Leela, the entire Mahaprakash Leela was the Lord's way of glorifying his devotees. Nothing else. Every devotee that came, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally picked up each devotee and glorified that person till that person was totally embarrassed. I mean, why would Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do that? Because Mahaprabhu is trying to show through his dealings what is a Vaishnava etiquette. When Krishna has to demonstrate what is a devotee, he does it himself in the role of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So essentially, we find that Mahaprabhu, he did this particular pastime. Sridhar Kolavech was somebody who was not known to anyone in the world. When Mahaprabhu said, get him, nobody knew where to find him only, you know, what to speak of getting him. So literally, there was such a struggle in trying to find who is that devotee that Mahaprabhu is trying to glorify. And then when Sridhar came, Mahaprabhu glorified him so much that the entire world knew about him. So essentially, Mahaprabhu is trying to show the entire world the private devotion of his devotees. What is glorification? Glorification is about trying to show the world what the world doesn't know about that devotee. That's what glorification is about. So devotees don't beat their own drum. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to do it for them. Unfortunately, in today's Kali Yuga, we beat our own drum, so nobody really has to do it for us. The Lord definitely doesn't have to descend to do it for us. So the first thing is how you celebrate other success. The second is how you cope up with your own success. And the third is, how do you speak about other success? That actually leads to peace of mind. Most people who are trying to celebrate their own success, most people who are trying to glorify themselves, they're mentally not peaceful. And because they're not mentally peaceful, they try to become peaceful by glorifying themselves. They try to secure peace by trying to speak about their own greatness. One time, there was a man who was, he had a very costly flower vase. Extremely costly. One day, this man, he picked up that flower vase and threw it on the ground and broke it. So all his friends, they were shocked. This is in the middle of a party, you know. They asked him, why did you do that? This man said, for the last 15 years, this flower vase is giving me tension. Anytime I have a party at home, I'm always thinking, what if this flower vase breaks down, you know? What if somebody trips on it and breaks down? And I was so tensed about the flower vase that I never enjoyed any party. So now I have broken it. So now I'm peaceful completely, you know? It doesn't matter to me. At least it's gone off my mind. So sometimes, peace of mind is more important than anything else. And to achieve that peace of mind, people are ready to do anything. And therefore, how does one get that peace of mind? When one's ambition and desire shifts from praising oneself, celebrating one's own success, to praising Krishna and celebrating the success of the devotees, there's actually peace of mind. Because there's no pressure on the mind that I need to celebrate my own success. And there's no pressure on the mind that I need to perform to be able to celebrate my own success. And it's most easy to celebrate other success because we can see it all over. we have so much pressure in our mind that I need to celebrate my own success, I need to celebrate my own success, that that pressure prevents us from using our intelligence and trying to find good in others and celebrating others' success. And therefore, when one's desire and ambition becomes to make Krishna famous, then it becomes much easier to do that. Srila Prabhupada, look at the extent of his ambition. When Srila Prabhupada was in Delhi, much before he left to the Western world, he was sitting on a park bench and one man came and sat next to him and started discussing with Prabhupada. And he asked him, who are you and all that. And Prabhupada just started speaking offhand who he is. He said, world acharya, having thousands of disciples across the world, hundreds of temples in different parts of the world, millions of books being printed and distributed across the world. And at that point of time, ISKCON had not even been started. So Prabhupada is speaking about what is not even happened. Now if you look at it from the point of view of what is Prabhupada trying to do, you might think that, come on, what kind of a ambition is this? What kind of a person is this, glorifying himself so much, having such big ambitions in life? But what was his ambition about? His ambition was not about glorifying himself. His ambition was about bringing glory to Krishna. And therefore you find that Prabhupada did such massive things to bring glory to Krishna. When he was bargaining for the Fisher Mansion in Detroit, that the agent, the owner of that Fisher Mansion, was saying this would cost him $300,000. And Prabhupada, he looked at the whole mansion, he liked it very much, and he said that we are beggars, we don't have any money, can you give it to us for free? And what an ambition, this is too much. $300,000, he's saying, can you give it to us for free? When Prabhupada was in a BBC interview, the BBC interviewer was asking Srila Prabhupada, what is your thought about democracy? He said, it's demon crazy, So he said, what do you recommend? He said, monarchy. And then this BBC interviewer, he asked Prabhupada that, who do you think is the ideal king to be, ruling the world? Prabhupada said, me. That BBC interviewer fell off from the chair, He said, what an ambition, Prabhupada said, I am the most qualified king. And this man said, do you really want to rule the world? Prabhupada said, no, I won't sit on the throne. I'll make somebody else sit and I will guide him. So essentially, if you look at that kind of ambitions, where does the desire for becoming so successful and ambitious come from? Because Prabhupada, he didn't have an ambition of making palaces for himself, but he had an ambition to make those palaces for Krishna. And therefore, if you look at Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, their lives, they changed their houses from palaces to trees. They were sleeping in palatial buildings, and then in some days they were sleeping under trees, because they changed their priority from self-glorification to glorification of Krishna. And therefore, because they changed their priority from self-glorification to glorification of Krishna, they could build palaces for Krishna while continuing to live under trees. And therefore, the challenge is how to continue staying under a tree while building a palace for Krishna. Many times, we build a palace for Krishna and we install ourselves there. And that's the mistake that many times people make. One very famous saint in India, whom his people call him God, he was along with Pejavar Swami in a conference. And Pejavar Swami just asked him, are you God? This man said, no, I'm not God. And the Pejavar Swami said, why are your disciples calling you God? And he said, why are you allowing your disciples to call you God? He said, I don't want to hurt their sentiments. Can you imagine? In the process of not wanting to hurt their sentiments, he's okay being called God. And when Srila Prabhupada went through the same phase in the initial days of the founding of the Hare Krishna movement, there were four most prominent and senior disciples of Srila Prabhupada who began to call Prabhupada God. And as soon as Prabhupada heard them calling him God, he banned them from ISKCON. The four first and topmost disciples of Srila Prabhupada were banned from ISKCON because they called Prabhupada God. he chose to remain under a tree while building palaces and installing Krishna as the king of the world. And therefore, Prabhupada could retain his success, and in the midst of being very successful, he could make Krishna famous. And therefore, in this whole episode, we find that Yudhishthira Maharaj trying to glorify Krishna and give him the topmost position of being the most respectable personality. So essentially, we saw about how one should celebrate other success. We also saw about how one should cope up with our own success. And we also saw about how one's coping up with our own success. While coping up with our own success, we should learn to glorify the success of others. And then we also saw that real success is about is possible when we never are satiated by glorifying other devotees and Krishna. And of course, we also saw that the greatest ambition should be to glorify Krishna and make Krishna famous. And in trying to achieve that ambition, no matter how ambitious we may be, no matter how successful we may be, we will still stay under trees. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.